Well, well, well. Welcome into the 8 o'clock hour. If you're on hold, stay there. Going to get back to your Falcons calls in just a second. But, Oren, we got a little breaking news.
I love it when we get breaking news past 8 o'clock during the week.
Love it.
Maybe they buried this because of what the news actually the news. Is.
That's a great point. The Atlanta Braves today signed right-handed pitcher Raisel Iglesias.
Yes, that Raisel Iglesias. Yeah,
that one, the one that's been here. To a one-year, $16 million contract.
Beg your pardon, how much?
For the 2026 season.
That's spread out over I don't know if I want him for 3 years, but $16 million?
He's going to be 36 in January. We just looked it up. And to his credit, over his this is per the press release from the Braves, over his final 45 games of the season, Iglesias pitched to a 1.25 ERA over 43 and a third innings. And his 1.5 FWAR in that span ranks second among relievers in the NL. But does that disqualify what happened in the first half of the season where, Oren, need we remind the audience that the ERA hit the high watermark of over 7 at one point during the season?
He was a one-pitch pitcher.
And that one pitch was not... You know, Hunter Green's 103 mile an hour fastball.
That bad boy. That fastball
about 93.
It was batting practice, basically. Yeah, batting practice fastballs he was throwing the first half of the season. So all you had to do was just sit and wait for that slider, and when it inevitably came, yank that bad boy 400 feet the other way.
So many home runs in such a short period of time.
Off one pitch.
So many home runs.
Off one pitch.
Again, as I tweeted at C. Thomas Radio, for $16 million, he better be second half, Iggy. He better be.
Can we prorate that? Like, if he's that good, just, hey, tell you what we'll do. We'll just hold off payment. And if you play better, we'll just give you that money later. Let's do that. Let's prorate it and just maybe hold it. We'll keep it in escrow for you. How about that, based on your performance?
I mean, to call that a gamble, I mean, again.
What was the market like out there? That Raisel for
we'll
16,
never know.
He may end up getting like the biggest per year average salary, even though it's only 1 year. But I don't think anybody in the market is going to touch $16 million per in the closing market this offseason.
Well,
maybe the dude from New York, but otherwise, that's about it.
No, I was telling you in the break. Well, Devin Williams had his own problems with the Yankees last year, but the Yankees, ironically, as I was just telling you in the break, they signed a really good pitcher, Ryan Yarbrough. I believe the deal was for $2.5 million. I mean, I thought that was more like, because here's the problem with the Braves, and then we'll get back to your calls. They need multiple bullpen pieces.
Lots.
Arms. And multiple late inning bullpen. They played.
Arms.
The Atlanta Braves played the 2025 baseball season without a setup man. I mean, that's essentially what happened. Joe Jimenez never came back in his status. Now nobody knows really what's going on with him, how healthy he's going to be long term. So what do you have back there? I mean, I guess maybe that's an argument to bring him back, but sheesh, $16 million. Wow, that's a lot of money. That is a very un-Braves number to me, 16 mil. I'll be interested to hear what our buddy Grant McCauley has to say about that. I'm sure he'll be on the station tomorrow or later this week.
I don't want this to mean that at some point during the season – Jesse Chavez finds his way back on this roster.
Well, he's retired.
Right now.
Well, and they'll bring him out just to come back for the Braves.
Right now.
He has a clause in his retirement. The Braves can bring him back for his eighth stint.
I'm just saying, I don't want $16 million going to Raisel, meaning that Jesse gets a per diem to come here and pitch.
Well, if you're spending $16 million on a closer that literally was the definition of Jekyll and Hyde for one half of the season and the other...
He can only throw one pitch. He was a closer that had one pitch.
And a 7 ERA.
One pitch.
Again, I'm not taking away. He was
the second half, he was lights out, man.
But
lights out.
He's 36 years old. I mean, there's no guarantee.
And I don't think the Braves are in a position next year to wait 4 or 5 months just for a closer to come back around to his normal self.
No. Well, look what happened this year. How many games did they win this year? 75? Was it less?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, not good. 404-726-0929. So, again, Braves bringing back an old friend, Raisel Iglesias, 1 year, $16 million. Interesting. Ken is up first. Ken, go ahead.
Yo, what's going on, fellas?
What up?
Listen, 4 weeks ago, I called up Duke Chappelle and I told him, we're in a dark place, and they laughed at me. Oh, isn't that a dark place? Yeah, it is. Told him it was going to be a dark place. This Michael Penix thing, simple. You picked up a quarterback that had health issues. Once again, we picked up another player that had health issues. He plays to keep his knee safe. He knows he got issues. Everybody asks why he don't run. That's why he doesn't run, because he's been worried about getting beat up all the time. You cannot play in the NFL and play scared, number one. Number two, excuse me, they don't have a quarterback coach that could cultivate the guy even if he was healthy. Who is T.J. Yates? Right. He ain't doing that when he was in the pros. I don't even know why they thought that he was going to do something right now. Lastly, with Mars, it's simple. You make coaching errors that you should not be making at this amount of time that you have been coaching. You want to put a GM? The GM has brought in some good picks. However, if the head of the snake don't work, the body gonna go wrong either way. That's all I got to say.
No, I appreciate it. You're right. I mean, the expression, the snake rots from the head down. You're right. I mean, and right now, Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot and everyone else at the head of the snake has not put this team in a position to win this season at 3-7. It's unfortunate, but that's where this team is right now. So I think along with the decision about what they're going to do with Penix long term, I do think there's going to be, obviously, conversations about leadership as well. As we said, we were joking around about the Greg Allman report. Like, yeah, goes without saying.
Just to add some, a report just came out from Francis Romero, baseball reporter. Apparently, the Blue Jays and the Dodgers also offered Raisel Iglesias around $16 million, and he chose to come back to Atlanta.
Well, familiarity wins out, I guess.
Does it, though, Turtle?
I guess.
Does it,
well,
Turtle?
For him.
For him, yes.
I mean, you're
no
like,
hometown discount,
so,
then,
so
buddy?
So literally, like, the two World Series teams were like, hey, we want you to be a part of this thing, and he was like, nah. I'm going to go back to a team that won.
Go back to Atlanta.
Going to go back to a team that won 70 games last year. And
I don't want to mess around and have to move.
And where the first 80 games of the season, I had a 7 ERA. I mean.
Yeah. I don't want to go across the border 1-2.
Maybe he's just like, you know
LA's
what?
LA's too cool for me.
Yeah. He's like, you know what? I figured it out. So let me just. I figured it out in the second half. So let me just park my 36-year-old behind right here in Atlanta. Josh is up next. Josh, go ahead.
Hey, fellas, appreciate the Falcons talk.
Yeah, man, go ahead.
So, yeah, man, so I think it's easy to blame, right, Penix or even Morris. I think Penix needs time to grow. The guy's got a cannon, right? But my thing is I think it's more of a systematic problem. And you know, this is going to be a little out of the box, and I've said this before, and I don't think people like to hear it. And listen, we had Mike Smith, we had Dan Quinn. I mean, those guys were in the mix. Even Arthur Smith, right? He was in the mix. This regime is pretty much a disaster. But I think, as a longtime suffering Falcons fan, if you look at the whole history of the deal, I think it's more of a systematic problem. And people don't want to hear it. Arthur Blank, who I think is a wonderful owner and has done a tremendous amount for the city of Atlanta. And he was, overtime away from winning the Super Bowl. He should have moved the stadium up to Doraville where that Chevy plant was. He should have moved that thing, follow the Braves model, right? Get it up there north where there's
But what does that have to do with wins and losses, though?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what it has to do. And I appreciate the question. Here's what it has to do is when you're on a football field as a defense and the crowd is raucous, we painted the seats red just so we could make it look like there were more people there. The Mercedes-Benz for the Falcons has the least home field advantage in the NFL, and that is a factor.
But, you know, and I appreciate the phone call. Okay, sorry. You know what fixes that? Winning! You know what fixes that? Winning games at home. not losing to the Carolina Panthers the way that you just did. Everybody wants to make it out to seem like Mercedes-Benz is beautiful, but it's not, you know, fan-friendly in terms of creating a true home environment. Oren, I've been to Atlanta United games when the team was good. There is no better home field environment in the entire MLS. I'm telling you right now, everybody out there who agrees with our last caller, you know what fixes that? Winning! Winning football games and winning games at home. Come on, man. We got to be a little smarter than that. And you're telling me if the stadium was in Doraville, and to Oren said in my ear, let's shut out the entire city of Atlanta. That's a smart thing to do. At least the Braves Stadium is, you know, Oren, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. I mean, it's not far from the city. It's a quick ride up the highway. You want to go to Doraville? Okay. Yeah, sounds good. 404-726-0929. Jacob, you're up next. Jacob.
Yeah, I think overall we are in agreement of getting a new coach and everything. I don't know if Terry's going to stick around or not, but overall I want to emphasize, like, McCarthy is the way. I know there's, like, talk about Tomlin, LaFleur, Harbaugh, it's like jokes, but like all like entirely, you gotta get someone that's like a proven winner, not some OC or DC like Joe Brady or Cliff Kingsbury that's already kind of failed. We need someone like for real.
No, I appreciate the call. I agree. I like the McCarthy suggestion because, again, it's the one thing the Falcons have not had now in a long time, and that is consistency and stability. He's gonna come in, he's gonna win you your games, and he may not get you to the promised land, but right now, the promised land is a winning record for the Falcons. Let's make no mistake about that. That's the promised land for the Falcons right now. Sorry. I mean, let's walk before we can run, right? Get McCarthy, even if it's for 2 or 3 years, get him in here, get him to stabilize, and then you can go big game hunting. But McCarthy's the exact type of guy that this organization needs. Patrick finishes us off this segment. Patrick, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Turtle?
What's up, Patrick?
Hey, I agree with McCarthy. I've been saying that all along. He's stability. He's a true winner. I think we need to get Rich McKay out of the building. I know he's not in football operations, supposedly. He doesn't know anything about soccer. He's an attorney. Let's just throw him a retirement party, send him off on his way, get some stability in the building, get McCarthy in there. I think our team is talented. I think we've got great pieces. I don't know how to solve the quarterback problem. We have to keep Penix, but McCarthy can figure that out, but I think we need to get McCarthy in there. I am on board with that 100%.
Yeah, Patrick, good stuff.
Have a good night, Turtle.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's the model coach for what this franchise needs. He's not sexy. He's not boisterous. He's not going to come here and try to do the rah-rah thing. He's going to come in here, institute his system, and win football games. That's the type of old-school coach that he is, and I think he's what this team needs. All right, 404-726-0929. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you when we get back. Also, Raheem Morris joined Dukes and Bell. Very interesting conversation with the coach about where this team is and where it's going to go over the last 7 weeks of the season. All that and more. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Great conversation on the phones tonight about the quarterback situation, man. Michael Penix Jr. done for the year, ACL surgery, that whole rehab. So what should the Falcons do at their quarterback situation? We're talking about it with you. Hit me up on Twitter if you can't get through on the phones, at C Thomas Radio. Also, if you missed it, Raisel Iglesias back to the Braves, 1 year, $16 million. We hope that we get the second half pitcher for the Braves and not the guy from the first half, but he did, to his credit, finish the season really, really strong. Let's see if the Falcons can finish their season strong. Raheem Morris, head coach of the team, joined Dukes and Bell earlier today, and this was their exclusive conversation here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is Dukes and Bell. We are live inside of the Ticketmaster Studios. Each and every week, we get a chance to talk to our head coach, Raheem Morris. This is an interesting week, to say the least, because we now know the extent of our quarterback's injury, Michael Penix Jr. Coach, welcome in, first and foremost. We want to start there because Mike and I have been spending a lot of time on this. I want to ask you, as it's being reported, that Michael Penix needs reconstructive ACL surgery despite it being a partial tear. Can you elaborate on this?
Sure. You never want to jump the gun on any of these things, you know, so you never really want to answer. It's kind of like when you slow play from the beginning before you get the second opinion and all those type of things. He has a partially torn ACL. You know, they're going to go in, they're going to take the ACL and repair the ACL, which means reconstructive surgery on the ACL injury. You know, the thing you do, these, the reason you do this is so you can avoid worse injury possibly to the young man and do it in a timely fashion so he can be ready to go in a timely fashion as quickly as possible. And we feel great about it. We feel great about the decision from the doctors. We feel great about the decision from the second opinion and all the things, that steps that you had to go through before you make those decisions and put it out there and tell people, because you want those things to be done the right way and you want to handle those things obviously with soft gloves. And the way we're doing it, with the expectations of getting Michael back even better and stronger and faster, and some of the things that he's already shown us from his 2020 knee injury on the other knee,
right,
and now it's happening with this one, and we got a lot of confidence that he can be able to bounce back and give us great play and give us great, you know, time off and be ready to come back, if that makes sense.
I mean, we talked about going back to the summer and just what a leader he is on the team. We talked about that scrap with the Titans. And, you know, I saw how he almost looked disconsolate talking to Dave Archer after the loss in Berlin, because he, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve. And to be up 14 points in this game, and he's 13-16, it's just, he just, I mean, we're all pulling for the kid, but he's got to be lower than low.
So right, I think last week was a big time week for him in his growth and his maturity and his development. You know, we came off the heartbreaking loss in Berlin, and he was visibly shaken and upset. And he had a week of preparation where he's able to talk to all of us across the building in the organization about, you know, being having a hands-on approach and how do you handle those things and how do you be more involved with our offense. And last week, to watch him go and execute and to come in the offices and be able to sit down and talk to a bunch of different people about a bunch of different things and really grow, and then to watch it start to come to life in that first half. You know, he went down three times in a row, scored three straight touchdowns, came out in the second half, and unfortunately that's when the injury happened and wasn't able to return. But you felt like that was going to be a turning point for him, you know, and hopefully, obviously, with him, that would be our football team.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, got hurt, you know, but, like, I don't want that growth and that development to get lost and lose sight of that. And for me, I was more just hurt for the kid. I was more hurt for him. I was more hurt for the experience that he has to go through and having to go through that again. But he is a tough dude, man. He is he is meant for this. He's made for this. He'll bounce back, and he'll be ready to go. And we can't wait to get him back. But in the meantime, we got to go out there with Kirk Cousins and get a win.
Let's talk about Coach making plays. We look at these games, especially the last few, and literally we're a few plays away. I know it doesn't mean anything because we didn't win. But I got to ask you this, because partly as we see this and we view this is, you call a play, not you, but Zach. Let's just use as an example. The guy is open. You throw it to him, he misses the ball, plays there to be had. We don't execute. And that gets back to, for many people, is that coaching or is that just players not making plays? And a lot of this has been, well, coaching is a part of that. And I'm just curious, how do you view that? Because it feels like for the last few weeks, that's kind of been our lot in life. Plays there to be made, we don't make it, but yet it comes back to bite us. And a lot of people are wondering, like, what's the deal? Why are our guys not making those plays? It's football. But the other side of it is, how much of it is coaching?
You know, you take it – you never point fingers in this game. So the coach is always going to say there's something you can do better, you know, timing, detail, discipline, whatever the case may be on the route concept, whatever it is. And the player's never going to point the finger at the coach. They're always going to say they got to catch that ball, they can make that play, they can do those things. So, like, I think the whole thing is just the accountability of it all and all working together and be able to come together to make those plays. And, like, you just mentioned it. You know, we got a bunch of different opportunities out there with a bunch of different people, and those things have to happen. And you have to make those plays. And there's sometimes where the person that's taking the blame is absolutely right. And then there's other times he's not. But you got to have the love and the feeling that you want to have a way of helping every single person. And, like, when I'm talking about our guys in place, I take all of that. Like, I got to be able to help those guys make those plays and get a chance to make them do it better. And why can we do it better? Giving them more reps, giving them more opportunities. How can you make those opportunities even better? Make it more competitive. Make it as hard as you can possibly make it. And, like, you're always going to wear it on your sleeve. And with whoever dropped the ball, whoever didn't make the play, they're always going to wear it on their sleeve. And I think that's the signs of, like, the people you want to be around, the kind of character that you bring in the building.
Talking with Raheem Morris, guys, inside the Ticketmaster Studios, and we've talked about this with you before, but for guys that are new to the show, didn't hear it, your involvement on game day, you coach defense, you know secondary. When you're seeing a guy like Bryce Young just lighting us up, are you leaning into Brick and the assistants going, hey, what's going on here? Are you giving input because you're seeing things going south?
So it was the tale of two halves, right? You came out and it wasn't lighting you up. You were actually doing a great job of shutting them down, keeping it calm, and then there was some explosive plays happens. And that was the game of explosive plays. Made a big play at the end of the half. We ended up holding the three. Big explosive play to get down there and holding the three. you come back out in the second half and they make a couple explosive plays that shouldn't happen. And it's based on getting tired, discipline, some calls. It's the same thing we just talked about. Like, it's all over the place. So you can be able to talk about those things with them. And, like, we got, like, an accountable group. So, like, if it was a player's fault, that player was able to say it, communicate it right away. When it was a coach's fault or a bad call, there's no shock around that either. So, like, when we are on that side of the ball and you're fighting, you did see a couple of great plays. There were too many explosives given up to allow them to get that many yards passing down the field. I mean, the two big fourth down stops at the end of the game, in those crutch situations, we turned the ball over on a kickoff and they were able to go out there and get a four and out. I mean, there were some dynamic moments. So you can't say you were in the second half feeling desperate the whole time, but one too many big plays, particularly in the passing game, and that can't happen.
Coach, I'll be damned. We're second in sacks in the league. And it's something I know you heard when you got the job, and we talked about, oh, we got to get the quarterback. We got to get the quarterback. We're getting the quarterback. How frustrating is it to you to see that number and to see the guys and the effort, but yet we're not getting the results? Because that's something everybody wanted to see more of, and we're doing it.
It's time. And it's our time, and we got to go out there and get it done. And, like, I say this to you a million times. I've told you this a million times. Stats is for losers.
Not that one, Coach. And we're second in sacks. Coach, we hadn't been second in – but we hadn't been second in sacks in forever.
It is what it is. We need more wins.
Correct.
You know, we need more wins, and that's the stat that matters. And, like, we have to go get it done. And that's a nice stepping stone. That's a nice step that we've taken when it comes to those things. But we need better, and we have to have better across the board.
What do you – sorry, Mike. What do you think's missing there, Coach? I mean, like, the sacks are not – a lot of people think that translates to what you're talking about, wins, right? You're getting more sacks. You're getting off the field, all the things. You're getting off the field on third down. What's missing there, in your opinion?
You got to make the moment. You got to play the play at the moment. We just talked about the big explosive plays, and, like, if you take away one of those big explosive plays or two of them, you're talking about a different result. And, like, you don't know which play it's going to be, but that's how our game is played. That's what the game is every single week.
When you have a conversation, anyway, the private conversation with Arthur Blank, and we have not heard from Mr. Blank on this season yet, but, I mean, this is something we talked about a few weeks ago with you, and I said, why don't you yell at some of these guys? You said, that's not your style. But do you feel there's some bad habits are creeping in when it comes to execution? Have you ever felt the need to maybe pull somebody, sit them, send a message to the team? Is that just not, you don't feel it's worth that smoke, or that's just not your style?
We pulled a bunch of people, you know. We've sat a bunch of people. You know, we've done all those things. You know, we're just not the ones that openly tell you about it. You know, like, if you creatively find out what happened and you're able to get into the deep weeds of how you go about your business and how you go out there and you make those changes, because everybody's going to be needed. There's different areas of the football field where people got to play, and it's going to be done in the most respectful fashion, in my opinion, because we got to go out there and we're going to need everybody at some point. These things happen across the board every single day, and these things have to be handled with straight, open conversations. And, like, you know, where communication lacks, you know, that's where negativity fills the void. And, like, there's not a guy in the building that can tell you that they don't know exactly where they stand on a daily basis and how we're going to go about our business and how we're going to try to plan to win.
So why are these guys clutch?
You know, that's what you got to have. You know, you got to make those plays. You got to be clutch. You got to have those moments. You know, like, you're not saying anything that's not the truth. You know, that hadn't happened in the last couple of weeks. You know, we could talk about all the plays where in the last 3 weeks where we could have won the football game if we make them. You know, we have to make those plays. And, like, that's got to happen. We need those plays to be made.
Coach, how does this offense look different with Kirk back as a starter? When I say that, more play action, more of him under center, less pistol? I don't know. I'm asking from that standpoint. Does it look that much different?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
Right? So, like, you got to do all those things that he's done well in his past. You got to do all those things that you know he's capable of doing. And, like, he's been an up under center quarterback for most of his career. He's done some things in the pistol, obviously, with us. Obviously, when he's under the center, opens up play action for him that way. He's been of a keeper guy. But you want to do some things that he can do and some things that he's going to do well, right? And, like, we can do all of those things with him. And, like, we'll go out there. What he's done really well for us since he's been here when he got us to a 6-3 record is he was peppering completions all over the field, peppering to a point of a record. And, like, he can go out there and win in a bunch of different ways, but, like, we got to go out there and cater to him and do what he does best, and our football team's ready to do that.
How's the receiver core? How's Mooney? I mean, who's the next man up? Because we know Drake is likely not going to go at all, maybe 2 weeks for Drake.
You know, obviously, we need Mooney. You know, we need Mooney to go out there and make some plays for us. We need him to go out there and do a bunch of different things for us in order to win. You know, obviously, David Seals stepped up for us in a big way, not just with all the receptions, but really with all the things he's able to do and move around and get some of the blocking things going on. So he'll be called upon with Drake being out and doing all those type of things for us. And then, obviously, Bijan is always – he's called on to do everything, right? So he'll be called on to do some of those things in Kyle Pitts. You know, Kyle Pitts has to step back up and do a bunch of major part of his job, and we'll expect those guys to do those things. We got playmakers across the board, and Ty Lajeer, and a bunch of different guys that can go out there and make plays for us, and we'll call some other people on. And like we just talked about, there'll be people that have to be called up to make those plays, and people that have to be called up and be put in those clutch situations. You got to be clutch.
With the injuries, will you rely or lean on Bijan more?
You know, you always lean on Bijan, so it's hard to say you're going to lean on him more, you know, but you definitely want to go out there and figure out how to get him the ball, get him his touches. That's always going to be first and foremost in the game plans.
Right.
And then other than that is how do you complement that with Tyler, and then how do you get the ball to all your playmakers down the field and to be able to create some of those explosives, because those explosives really have you get down the field. Like, you know, the thing that we've cleaned up the biggest in the last 3 weeks is our red zone offense and being able to score touchdowns. I think we were 6 of 6 or whatever it's been, and you got to get down there more. So, like, let's find a way to do those things. We were close on third down last week before Mike went out until we hit skid row in the second half kind of with the third downs. But, like, you know, we had the ability to go out there and clean up some of that stuff and, like, let's go show it again and get this win.
5 or 6 plays every game. You've talked about it. Arch has talked. We've talked about it. If we can get those plays, and that's – it gets back to – by the way, have you talked with Terry – what's your conversation with Terry Fontenot? Because the perception is you guys are attached at the hip and things have to improve.
I was going to ask which one. you know, Terry and I definitely communicated at a very high level about everything. You know, we communicate about all the things that's happening. You know, right now, obviously, the big conversation this week has been the quarterback. Obviously, the big conversation has been, you know, how are we going to take care of the quarterback? You know, what's going to be the plans moving forward with the quarterback when he comes back? Because he's going to come back strong, and how, you know, how we want to make sure he's still developing throughout the whole process. You know, obviously, there's going to be some downtime. There's going to be some downtime there, but obviously, you know, how do we keep that ship rolling with the quarterback being out? And not talking about just the Kirk Cousins things. Obviously, that's the obvious part for him. But how are we going to maintain Michael staying sharp, Michael being well in tune with everything. So the communication with him, communication with his agent, all the people that are involved, you know, all the doctors that are involved in those things. So that's been a major thing that we've obviously talked about the last couple of days. So, but there's not a thing we don't talk about. So. You can pretty much chalk that for everything.
A few more questions, Coach, before we let you go about New Orleans. Before we get to that, 5-game losing streak, what's it like in the building, and what do you expect to learn about your team?
You know, I don't – there is a 5-game losing streak, but you wouldn't know walking through the building because, you know, there's just a bunch of guys that are accountable that are not going to allow it to happen, and that's coaches and players alike, you know, and the people in the building. You know, this is not that type of place. You know, this building is built on, you know, tough – you know, people first mentality, and that comes all the way from the top. So, like, when we get a chance to go out there and participate in the practice field or participate in the game, like, it's going to be everything that we got all for each other. And I think that's a major part of how this building works.
You know, we don't like New Orleans. You know this rivalry well. Doesn't matter what our record is, what their record is. Your expectations heading into Sunday with the team that, you know, again, records don't matter, right? They're going to show up and they're going to play us hard. What do you think about this New Orleans team and what you've seen so far on tape?
You know, obviously we don't like them, like you just said. I mean, that's there's no secret there. A bunch of people you respect.
Sure.
You know, obviously, just based on everything they've done, done a nice job with the new coaching staff. They've been able to go out there and really build things the right way and get guys going on. And, you know, the young quarterback is playing well or getting better, I should say, and that's a big process of it as well. The defense got some savvy vets on it that's been out there, and they're being coached by Brandon Staley, so we know that defense well, and some of the people over there coaching that defense got respect for those guys. They're going to come in and want to play. We're going to go there, and we got to play. And we don't like them, and it's no secret.
Hey, you get a bounce. Is Divine Diablo, can we expect to see him on Sunday?
Back, man. Let's go.
Oh, good to hear.
Divine Diablo.
Yeah, you guys are slipping, man.
Oh, man. Hey, we've been waiting for a minute.
Our energy's a little low right now.
We've been waiting for a minute. Look, man, this Penix thing, you know the deal. I mean, we're just all working through it.
I just hate it for this guy. I hate it for the kid.
Yeah, man, tell me about it. Yeah,
he said, tell me about it.
You hate it for the kid. That's awesome.
I hate it for
the kid. I feel bad for you.
He's a great kid.
Raheem Morris.
Well, we feel bad for you. Go get a dub. Man,
appreciate you.
Yeah, that last interaction there sums it all up right there. Everything that you need to know. Good stuff from Cole. I mean, what else can he say? I mean, I'm not here to pick apart his words at this point in the season. It is what it is. They're going to try to fix it and get better. That's all they can do. All right, when we get back, Oren Romain joins the fray with a producer six-pack, our weekly segment here on Chris Thomas Tonight. And don't go anywhere, because you're also going to hear from Jalen Walker, who also joined the boys today, our stud defensive end. Maybe a bright spot there, something to hang our hats on with our number 15 overall pick. Producer Six Pack next on Chris Thomas Tonight. A ton going on this very busy, busy Wednesday hump day evening here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We have the Michael Penix Jr. situation out for the year, ACL surgery. What should the Falcons do? We've been taking your calls all show long. 404-726-0929. If you can't get in on the phones, hit me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. And then we got the breaking news about an hour ago that Raisel Iglesias returning to the Braves. 1 year, $16 million. Yeah, interesting. My first reaction was, whoa, that's a lot of money for a guy that had a tremendous second half but is about to be 36 years old and had a very, very poor first half. It was a tale of two halves. So hopefully we get second half Iggy to the guy that pitched to 1.5 ERA and, according to the advanced metrics, was the second best reliever in the NL in the second half of the season. So hopefully that's the guy that we get.
It was funny, too, they also put in the advanced metrics. Was less relied less last year on his changeup and slider.
You don't say.
I wonder why.
You don't say. I think he gave up 62 home runs on that pitch alone last year.
I wonder why he relied less on his two worst pitches.
Yeah. It's interesting, man, because it's just like, nobody else was out there to give that money to. Maybe split it two ways between two, like, good relievers.
Mark Bowman says that he thinks the Braves' loyalty is what won out in the end. The fact that at the trade deadline, they did not move Raisel. And that was the reason probably why he decided to stay with that team. So, like we said earlier,
again,
there was a report.
The two teams that were going after him.
The Blue Jays and the Dodgers,
oh,
the World
mean,
Series.
Yeah,
yeah,
you
World
mean those,
Series.
Those
the
two
AL
teams.
And NL champions,
yeah. Oh,
yes.
Oh, those guys. Yeah. Hey, maybe we can go get Blake Treinen from the Dodgers. He's a dude.
He is a dude.
He's a dude.
Yeah.
What's the kid's name for Trey, let's go make an offer for Trey Savage.
Yeah.
From the Blue Jays. Maybe we can just go do that. That'll be fun. What do you say? Good grief. It's interesting. I'm monitoring Twitter.
Okay.
I'm checking the Grants and the Bowmans and
it seems to be generally well received.
So
I don't want to put thoughts in people's heads or make any assumptions, but the belief is that for a guy who had the numbers that he did the second half of the season, that maybe $16 million and him signing that $16 million deal this early in the offseason are both sort of good indicators that the Braves can, you know, maybe look to fill some other holes now instead of having to sort of worry about closing.
I just hope that $16 million
peace
is not –
peace of mind it gives them.
Well, here's my – and just to play devil's advocate, and here's my concern, more so than giving it to him, is how much is $16 million taking a chunk out of what Alex
something
is able
else,
to
yeah.
do?
Like, there's big talk this offseason about maybe signing – and there's confusion about where he's going to end up, which is also interesting. But Bo Bichette's out there. Now, I don't know if Bo Bichette ends up at shortstop or if he ends up at third base or
well,
if he ends up at
second
base.
I know we brought back Ozzie, but you can make the case that second base might be an area of need as well.
So, and then there's other bullpen arms that we talked about too. And, you know, we don't know what Ronaldo's going to be coming back in this rotation. So, maybe there's a guy who would potentially, you know, we don't know what Grant's going to come back with too. Grant had the ACL and he decided not to get the surgery. He's just going to rehab it naturally. So,
yeah, I'm more concerned about the amount than the player because we know what the deal is with the spending.
Oh, it's
you get a couple of moves, and that's usually it.
Yeah, it's a hard number, if you will.
The Braves, you know.
A hard cap.
The Matt Olson move is the outlier, not the norm.
Yes.
The Austin Riley contract is the outlier, not the norm.
Absolutely. And then, too, those big deals that you gave to guys like Austin and Ronnie and Matt Olson, those per year amounts, they kick up this year. So put you in a little bit higher of a salary number in Major League Baseball.
The only saving grace, I think, is you'll save on a DH. I don't think they're going to bring one in. It doesn't make sense for them to bring one in.
No, because you still got Murphy hanging around in Baltimore.
And Ronnie. I think Ronnie needs the DH. I don't know.
There's bats around that can help, help that out.
How many days a week are you letting Ronnie play the outfield? If you play five games a week, three?
That's a good question. We just saw what happened to a guy who had tons of knee issues. Right in line with the Falcons, so there's your.
If it was me, Ronnie's DH-ing maybe twice a week. So I know a lot of people don't want to hit, but that's just what I would do.
So then you need to go out and find another utility guy or a fourth outfielder.
Well, I think you need that anyway.
Well, that's true.
I think you need that anyway. Profar finished the year strong.
He did. He did very much so.
Which Michael Harris? We talk about Jekyll and Hyde. Which Michael Harris are we getting?
First half and second half the same as Rizal, absolutely. Is he going to need to have to switch his stance again in order to get going? Or
Ozzie was unplayable at the end of last year.
Absolutely he was.
And you're bringing him back. That news broke on our very airwaves.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for that.
Your catching situation set, obviously third base is set.
You got your rookie of the year who's going to net you another high first round pick, so to speak, and Drake Baldwin.
You would have to argue they cannot go into the season with the starting rotation as is. They have to get at least one, quality starter, not all star maybe, but I mean, you're gonna go again. You mentioned it. What is Reynaldo Lopez now? I mean, let's see now.
What would it be?
Sale.
It's Sale. It's
Strider.
It's Schwellenbach.
Schwellenbach.
Is Hurston Waldrop now going to be a fourth or fifth starter?
I think he is.
And then you got Reynaldo kind of floating around there, too. Oh,
floating around. I don't like floating around. I want.
You want definite? I want both feet on the ground.
I want contention.
Both feet on the mound, if you will.
You won 75 games last year. I want contention, please. Thank you very much.
So, and there's other guys, too, that made spot starts for you last year that you plan on having in the future. Not some of those other guys, but Didier Fuentes. What happens with DDR Fuentes this year? Is he a guy that starts out the year in the rotation as well? Can he be a consistent contributor to the staff?
The one thing I absolutely cannot hear, we'll get to a six pack next hour because we're down this Braves rabbit hole, but the one thing I can't hear, Oren, is, well, we have AJ Smith-Shawver coming back next year, and we got. We'll see what Grant Holmes can be. No.
I don't want to depend on Tommy John guys, man.
You getting back into the game or what?
Tommy John guys need to be pleasant surprises or additions that kind of bolster what's going on, not guys that, we're sitting in June and Grant Holmes now is having to pitch on a Sunday afternoon to give you five or six innings. Like, no, because the rest of the rotation is just shot. Like, he comes in and gives you that open start or whatever. He's like, no, I don't want those guys.
And I also – this is also what I don't want to hear. Well, Aaron Bummer is going to slide into the setup role and we're going to have, maybe Reynaldo Lopez take a spin in the bullpen and see what he can do. No.
You want them to be – if you're a starter, stay a starter.
Okay, you brought back Iglesias, fine. You need at least one more high-leverage guy. Like, at minimum, I would say two. You went a season, a full major league season, in the year of our Lord, 2025, without a setup man. I mean, excuse me, hello? Like, that's kind of a really important piece for this team.
Yeah.
Like, you did not have an eighth inning guy.
Who's the guy that the Mets signed last year from this Braves team? The lefty. Oh, man. It's going to bug me now.
Signed from the Braves?
Signed from the Braves, yeah.
Oh, A.J. Minter.
A.J. Minter. Yeah, Minter. You let Minter walk out, and shout out to him.
And Joe Jimenez was hurt all year.
But, yeah, you didn't replace those guys.
I like Dylan Lee, but he's not enough. And he... Dylan Lee is a good pitcher, but I feel like Dylan Lee is an excellent specialist. He's a good reliever otherwise. Like, he's an A-plus lefty specialist, but he's like a good reliever. I'm not, no knock against it. I think he's amazing if that's his role.
Here's the list of names of guys who started last year for the Braves. Cal Quantrill.
Nope.
Scott Blewett.
No, that's, yeah, that name.
Cookie Carrasco.
He's about 40. Nope.
David Stanley. That was the guy they got from Texas, right? That they made the trade.
Dunning?
Dane Dunning was the guy they got from Texas. That's right. David Stanley. Who the heck is David Stanley?
I don't know.
A guy who pitched
I have
last
no
year.
Idea. Yeah. I don't know.
Joey Wentz.
No.
Eric Fedde.
No, thank you.
Yeah, these are the guys last year who made at least one star for the Braves.
Eric Fedde had like a 6 ERA when he was trading.
They want a guy, Austin Cox. Yeah, Jose Suarez. God bless him. The last game of the season, Charlie Morton got to have a start.
Well, thank you, Charlie.
That was ceremonial. That was great.
To quote the great Randy Mack, here we go, Charlie.
Here we go, Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, bud. Yeah, not good. I would say that list is not good. No bueno, as they say.
Grant Holmes made the third most starts for you last year.
That's amazing. That's amazing. When you have Chris Sale, Spencer Strider.
I didn't even mention your lead dog, your big innings man last year for the rotation. Mr. Dependable, Bryce Elder.
Oh, that's right. And his 5.5 ERA that he sported with him. He was a punching. I felt bad for him, man. He's just a punching bag.
Bryce was that dude where it was like, all right, he's giving up 8 through 3 1/3. Hey, Bryce,
can
I'm sorry,
buddy. 80, get us to 85 pitches.
You got to go 85 or 6, man. Like at this point, like, hey, whatever you got to do, just I don't know how many you can keep in the yard, but.
What happened to him? One of the great mysteries, man.
When you are a location pitcher.
And you can't locate.
Well, like I said earlier with Rizal and his batting practice fastball, every pitch that Bryce Elder threw was batting practice.
It was
pitch.
92.
And just and flat. Just no spin, just no movement whatsoever.
Just a meatball.
Basically a pitching machine pitch. Just
my goodness.
Just lining up and just pit it out.
Well, that's your state of the Braves right now.
But Rizal's back for $16 million. Hopefully we get the second half Rizal, like we said, rather than the first half Rizal.
We shall see. All right, good stuff. Oh, we'll get to a six pack or some questions before we get out of here at 10 o'clock. Coming up next, Jalen Walker. One of the bright spots for the Falcons. Hopefully he continues to shine throughout the last 7 games of the season. He joined Dukes and Bell. You'll hear that conversation when we get back on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.